get my... Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to a very special guest. She's a New York Times bestselling author. She's written a new book called Secrets to the Grave, and she's here to talk about it. Her name is Tammy Hoke, and she's here. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
I hear it's really cold down in Florida. Are you down in Florida right now?
I am, yeah. And yeah, it's very cold. We're highly offended by this.
I'm here and it's like 20 degrees here, so I know how you feel.
Yeah.
It's worse here in Pennsylvania. Don't come to Pennsylvania.
No, I've moved to Florida for a reason.
Now, I hear these books, now this new one called Secrets to the Grave, out from Dutton, and it'll be available December 28th, in case anybody's listening early to this. This is the second in a trilogy, is what I'm hearing. Is that true?
Well, I think it will be at least a trilogy now. I didn't really set out to write a series, because that's not my thing usually at all. But these characters just kind of won't let go of me, so I keep going back to them. And they aren't done. They still have things to say, so...
They're definitely saying them. Your books here are very, sometimes very interesting. I really mean to say a little disturbing, but
mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy writing books like that?
I do. Yeah.
Why? The question is why.
About me. I love the psychology of it, and to try to get into the heads of these people and figure out why they do what they do, whether we're talking about a bad guy or a good guy or a victim or a criminal. I love the psychology of that.
Deeper than that, I thought was just a tremendous book. I still remember how much I enjoyed reading that book. And then I read this book, and this book's even more intense.
Well, thank you.
So you're doing your job very well. I mean, you're,
I'm glad to hear that.
Your characters are very much three-dimensional. They're very... you feel like you know these people. I mean,
yeah.
you get into, like you said, you get into their heads, and then you think, I hope I don't know anybody like this.
Right. Yeah. Certainly, for some of them, you really don't want to think that's your next door neighbor.
You've been writing. How many years have you been writing now?
My first book came out in 1988.
So it's been 22 years.
Yeah.
You got the math right. 22
like,
years.
Shocking to me. 22 years.
Does it seem like 22 years?
Pardon me?
Does it seem like 22 years at all?
In a way, and at the same time, I'm like, well, wow, how did that happen? But, it was like when I started Secrets to the Grave and I did the prologue with the author's note talking about all the things that happened. The book takes place in 1986, which I was just getting, I was then getting ready to start my first book. And, go back through the history of that and the things that were in and hot and the things that were happening in the news. I'm like, oh, my God, that was a long time ago. People didn't have cell phones.
And that's what's interesting about this book. You think to yourself, oh, this is in the 80s, because you forget while you're reading it that it takes place in the 80s.
Yeah. So they had, fewer tools to work with in terms of forensic technology. At that point, they still had not used DNA evidence in a court case yet. So
you have to keep all that in mind. That makes it harder for you to write, I would think.
Yeah, a little bit, because I would check myself. Every once in a while, I'd have something that just seemed automatic to me, and I'm like, ooh, I'm thinking that probably they didn't have that in 1986, and then I'd have to stop and go back and do the research and confirm that they did or didn't have it.
Right. So that it's a lot to keep in mind as you're writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I don't know how you keep everybody straight and all these characters straight, like who did what to who and the possibilities of who the killers are. It's like every page is like it's a different scenario. Your head starts spinning after a while.
Right.
Well, it's all true and you have to keep it all straight. It's hard for the reader, too.
Yeah.
But
it's sort of a shell game,
But this book, I read it, and I was halfway through, and I knew I needed to read it for the interview. Before I knew it, I was up 1, 2 in the morning, and I couldn't stop reading this book. I mean, literally could not stop reading it.
Oh, I love that. That's the best praise.
I mean, it's just, it's like eating peanuts. You just can't stop. And it's like, this is ridiculous. I hope she doesn't write another book this year or I'm never going to get any sleep. You know? Do you get disturbed writing them? I mean,
No, which I'm not sure what that says about me either.
I'm just wondering, I mean, when you write about, you know, the subject matter like this, I mean, killing and all the things that go on in this book, and there's a lot of interesting things that happen in this book, things that, you know, that would disturb you. But I just wonder if writing them makes you, you know, bothers you at all. I mean, I know some actors say that when they do, you know, scenes of gore and or violence, that sometimes it affects them. But I wondered if you as a writer are affected by violence, too.
I kind of try to distance myself emotionally a little bit from those scenes. But the whole process for me is asking questions. So, for instance, we have the character of Dennis Farman, who's a very disturbed little boy. You know, if I had to think that Dennis Farman lived next door to me, I would be pretty unhappy and upset about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, in writing him, it's an exploration of that character.
I don't know why, but your book reminded me. I had read Lisa Gardner's recent book, too. For some reason, the plots are not similar, but for some reason, something reminded me of her book, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because her book had a lot to do with children who are disturbed, too. So I guess the Dennis character made me think of her book, and I thought, wow. You know, and that's all of a sudden you think from one to the other. It's like one person reminding you of another. You know, sometimes
right,
it's
right.
like that. But these are totally different books. I mean, yours is nothing like hers, and the plots are not even that similar. But there's just a few things that are like, oh wow, I just read something like that. You know.
Yeah, we always say that's like you know, there's something in the ether that others sort of draw on, and then all of a sudden there's, you know, five books that have similar.
Did you ever dream you'd be this successful at writing?
You know, I don't know if I did. I'm very goal-oriented, so I wanted to be, you know, successful. I wanted to be a bestseller. I didn't really think beyond that.
So you really just, you were just doing your job, and it kind of happened. And the reason it happened is because you work hard at it.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I first read your book, Guilty Is, what was it, Night Sense, was the first one, that in that two-book series, which to this day, when I think about how much fun I had reading those two books, it was amazing. I mean, they're just... And you read Night Sense, and you're like, oh, no, now I've got to read the next one.
Yeah.
And, of course, now we had to wait, like, how many months before it came out? And it was like, she can't do this to us again. This is just terrible. As readers, it's very difficult to wait a year for the next book.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, and while we understand that the writers take their time and want to do it right, which is perfectly acceptable, you know, it's like torture waiting for the next one.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we wish we could write as fast as readers can read, but that doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
I mean, and there are some people who pick up this book and read it all in one night, and then what do they do?
Yeah, and there they are. They gotta go back and read the old one.
That's right. You started out writing romances. Now,
yeah.
And so why the transition? What made you make the transition from romance to mystery/thriller?
Well, you know, I actually started out writing romantic comedy, which...
Did you really?
Yeah, which seems quite a large leap across the dark pond. But, I started out with that because I knew I could do it, and I knew I could do it well. And not a lot of people can write comedy. It's tricky.
How did you know you could do it well? I mean, what told you, you just knew you had the talent for it?
Well, I always, you know, I've done it... through high school and stuff, I'd written a lot of satire and comic pieces and stuff, and I knew I could write good dialogue, so I had confidence that I could do that, and I knew that would be a really a good way for me to get my foot in the door of publishing, and at the time I had started reading in the romance genre and found out it wasn't really what I had been so snobby about before. And I enjoyed the whole idea of exploring relationships and why they work and why they don't work. But I didn't want to get pigeonholed either. So I never would write the same book over and over. you know, so one book would be a romantic comedy, and one book might have a little suspense in it, and one book, you know, I tried to make them each a little bit different so that I wasn't going to just get pegged as writing comedy.
Right.
And then, I started dabbling with the suspense element and enjoying that. And when I went to write, I wanted to write a bigger standalone kind of a book. Every idea I had a dead body at the beginning of it. So,
oh, really?
I guess that's the way I'm supposed to go.
You sound like you're afraid of what people are going to think of you. I mean, when we look at authors' pictures on their books, thriller writers, mystery writers, and we think, and sometimes, I mean, look at Jeffrey Deaver's pictures, and he looks like he'd be like a serial killer. You look at that picture and think, oh my gosh, I don't think I'd want to run into him.
Yeah.
But he's the nicest human being in the world.
Right.
I mean, very intelligent. And you realize, well, the publishers are doing it that way to make it seem like he's more menacing than he is.
Well, possibly. I don't know. They always tell me I should smile and look happy. I'm like, but I don't write very happy stories.
So you don't think you should smile?
Well, I'm not opposed to smiling.
The Vince and Anne romance, I think, is a very nice thing. So you do have something to smile about in your books.
Yeah, actually, that was kind of a little surprise. That was all Vince generated. That was a character that I hadn't realized would be as important as he became. When I wrote Deeper Than the Dead.
How does that work? The character just speaks to you and says that you need to write another book about me?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because I had intended to write Deeper Than the Dead and then take a break from those characters. And I had intended all along to come back and write a second book, which I have yet to write. Secrets to the Grave is an entirely different book than what my original idea was.
Well, I got total misinformation. I was told it was a trilogy. I was all excited about the third book.
Oh, there will be. No, there's probably... I would say there's going to be four minimum, because I just turned in the synopsis for the next one.
Right.
And that was too kind of a something that came to me a little bit like a bolt of lightning, and I went, oh my gosh, that's what I want to write next, and I want to keep that setting in Oak Knoll, and it's a story that kind of hinges on DNA technology and advances in DNA technology.
And what I like about your books, too, is that the police people are always eating these wonderful donuts and stuff.
Yeah.
So you get hungry right in the middle of the book. It's like,
I know. It's like, oh, have an enchilada out of the vending machine.
Now, tell me the truth, though. When you write stuff like that, do you get hungry?
Yeah, sometimes. Sure. Oh, they're having a pizza. I wish I had a pizza.
And the next thing you know, you're ordering a pizza.
Yeah.
Do you get lonely as a writer? I mean, is it hard to sit in a room and write a book?
I don't. But, you know, I grew up kind of much younger than my siblings. So I grew up kind of as an only child, and I spent a lot of time on my own, just, you know, reading and writing. And I, you know, obviously have a rich imagination. So I don't really feel alone because I have all these imaginary people hanging out with me and telling me what to do. So, and then I have my two little cocker spaniels that hang out with me in my office. So I'm quite content.
And do you still do anything with horses? I know you were big on.
Oh yeah.
Do you still come to the Devon Horse Show every year?
I'm hoping to come to Devon this fall. This past year, the Devon Show conflicted with the World Equestrian Games. And so I had gone to the World Equestrian Games just as a spectator.
Well, you need to come to our store, the Chester County Book of Music. That's where I work in Westchester. We're the biggest independent bookstore in the area.
Oh, well, I'll definitely do that when I come.
That would be wonderful. We've never had you at the store. It'd be great to have you.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to your publicist.
Absolutely.
But put in a good word for us, will you? We could use the sales, because you would generate a lot of sales because you're a huge author.
Oh, that would be great.
It's exciting. Tell people a little bit about what Secrets of the Grave is about. We haven't really talked about the details of the book. We can't give anything away, which is unfortunate because there's a lot of stuff I'd like to talk about, but I can't.
Right. Well, the story opens with the scene of a very brutal murder. A sort of mysterious woman with a mysterious past. She's an artist. Her name is Marissa Fordham, has been murdered, and her four-year-old child is left with her body. She's basically left for dead, but the child is is not dead. The child is alive, and the child is the only witness to the crime. And that's what kicks the whole thing off. And then as the sheriff's office becomes involved, the sheriff's detective wants to bring in the character Anne Leone, who is a teacher turned child advocate, to deal with the 4-year-old little girl, and hopefully to coax out of her some details of who the killer might be.
And you really like to start off with a bang, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Just get the reader hooked, and that's the whole idea. I mean, a lot of times the readers will say, and I know because I work in the store, they'll say, "Well, I got bored after 50 pages, or I couldn't take any more." But your books are always interesting from beginning to end. I mean, I've read other.
I mean, that's what I want as a reader. You know, I mean, there's a book out right now that like everybody on the planet is reading except for me because I'm 10 years behind in my reading. But, you know, every single person says the same thing to me. Well, you know, the first 100 pages, you have to kind of slog along. And I'm like, then why don't I just turn to page 100? Because I don't have time to slog along in something that I'm not going to enjoy.
Especially if it's an author you really like generally, and it's they're slow. You know, you almost feel cheated. You almost feel like saying, you know, speed it up a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel as a writer, I can kind of picture this person sitting there, you know, and they're kind of tinkering, and I'm like, okay, get on with it.
Is it the Dragon Tattoo?
No, we got no time here. People have limited amount of time to read. They want to get hooked right away and get pulled into something and go for a wild ride, you know?
Right. Now, are you talking about the Dragon Tattoo series?
Yes.
I figured you were, despite the way you were talking about it. Yeah, that's one of those books that once you get into it, you're into it. And, you know, and you can't stop reading it.
That's what everybody tells me, but I'm daunted by that.
Well, what I'll do is I'll go back and read it again and tell you what page to start on.
Okay, that would be great. That would be awesome. But I need the cliff notes for that first 100 pages.
And that's I've often wondered when writers do blurbs for other people. I mean, what happens if they don't like the book?
Oh yeah, well that does happen.
I mean, what do you do? Do you tell your friend, the writer friend of yours, that you don't like their book? What do you do? Do you be honest? It doesn't seem fair not to be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do very few blurbs just because I have basically two careers, so I have very little time. And I really, if I'm going to do a blurb, I'm going to read the book.
Right.
I'm not going to just, you know, say, oh, ask somebody else what it was about.
Right. Well, yeah, it wouldn't be fair to the reader if you're putting your name on somebody else's book to say it's great. It better be great.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, and that's it's tricky because, you know, if somebody asks me, what do you think of this book? And as the author asking me, as I feel kind of self-conscious, I don't want to hurt their feelings.
Right. Yeah, that can be very tricky.
What's great about your books is they always make you think. I mean, there's always a, you know, what if I knew somebody like that? What if something like this happened to me? What if I was next door to a murder like this? What would I think?
Right.
And this is all stuff that can really happen.
Oh, absolutely.
And to read this book and to be, and it is disturbing. I'll be the first to admit I was disturbed. But in a good way, in an interesting way. It's one of those books that stays with you long after you read it.
Yeah, I like that idea too because, you know, there are questions raised. That's what I like to do when I'm working on a book. You know, I want to bring some questions out and say, well, what would you do about this? How would you feel about that? You know, things aren't always black and white and cut and dried. You know, what would you do with a child like Dennis? What do you do with that?
I don't think there is an easy answer for that question.
There's not at all, you know. A lot of people think they have an answer, and they say, well, you know, you'd either go one way or the other. You'd either, you know, discard this child for the rest of his life, or, you know, somebody else is going to say, well, you nurture him and try to change him. But is there any changing somebody who's hardwired the wrong way? You know, so, yeah.
And so many things influence the way a child turns out. I mean, there's so many, it's not just one influence. There could be 100 different things that influence how they turn out.
Exactly.
And what do you do if you're a parent of somebody like that and you know your child's out of control? You know, it's not easy.
No, there has to be a terrible sensation of not having control of the situation.
Have you?
And little things can set somebody off in a wrong direction without you ever meaning for that to happen, you know, but because of their past or whatever, you know, their interpretation is, oh, you didn't show up for this, therefore you betrayed me.
Right.
Or, you know, something when that was not the intent at all.
Do you still enjoy writing books as much now as you did at the beginning? I mean, is it still fun?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Or are there some days where it just seems like a lot too much work?
Well, you know, there's always days like that when you're you know, stuck in a plot point or, you know, the characters just aren't cooperating.
So what do you do? Just take a big chocolate bar out and
sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, you know, most often what I like to do is I have one whole wall in my office that is whiteboard, and if I feel really stuck with something, I go to the whiteboard and I just write right in the middle of it, what now? And just kind of free think and write ideas up and like, well, what's this character doing?
Sort of like they do on The Closer when they put all the pictures of the victims up and it's
and kind of brainstorm the whole thing.
And that brings me to a point that your books have humor in them too.
Oh yeah.
And just like The Closer, like she is in The Closer, she makes you laugh. Because
right.
If it were all serious, what would it be like? You know, you wonder.
Oh, my God, it'd be so grim, you know. Cops have, you know, it's often a very dark sense of humor, but they need a little levity to, you know, otherwise.
It'd be Karen Slaughter. I love Karen Slaughter's books. They're very, very, very serious and very grim and hard to read. But she enjoys writing those.
Yeah, it's weird.
You guys really do enjoy writing disturbing books. I mean, it's not... I mean, do you get fan mail that says your books are too disturbing? Do people ever say that to you?
Every once in a while, yeah. Every once in a while.
So what do you say to people like that?
Well, first, I had an email from a fan after Deeper Than the Dead. She was like, oh, my gosh. I had a stomach ache through the whole thing. I felt so bad. Everybody had bad things happening in their life, and I was just so upset. And I'm like, well, if I wrote about people who didn't have bad things happening in their life, that would be a pretty boring book. You know?
You'd be Danielle Steele then.
Yeah.
Although she still has tragedies in her books,
well,
too.
Well, yeah, there's always a big tragedy, you know, at least one.
Well, you have to have something to be boring.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah. What would you have? You just have people sitting around having conversation or something. You know?
So you're moving. You're really affecting people with your writing.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and you know, no book is for everybody. I think if a book was written for everybody, nobody would like it.
Well, your books are too. I don't think I could stop reading your books if I tried because they're just so interesting every time. I mean, time and time and time again.
Well, and I love to hear.
And I don't think I could ever stop. I mean, it would be like not eating anymore to me. Because I just enjoy them so much. And they're always, each one is always different in some way.
Yeah. And, you know, they're not for the faint of heart. You know, I don't pull punches in some of the graphic scenes and stuff. But, you know, I think from my point of view, violence should be shocking. It's a terrible thing.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it's not like you've got the television version of crime where people get shot and there's no blood.
But yet, if,
that's not real.
If they made a TV movie out of this, it wouldn't be half as violent.
Right.
I mean, unless it was on cable.
Yes.
And on cable, they could probably get away with it, but...
Yeah.
And you know, it's important that it's real. I mean, everything has to be real in it.
Yeah, it is to me. I mean, I want the crime to feel real. I want the procedure to be very, you know, as real as I can make it be. You know, that's what I want. I want an experience that I feel like it's really happening.
And the question is, in this book, who is the bad monster?
Yes.
Who is the bad monster?
Who is the bad monster?
I've never heard that phrase from a kid before. It's kind of an interesting, it's a neat twist in the.
Yeah.
When kids.
I got the idea for bad monster from a story that a friend of mine told me about going to a Christmas pageant and there were, you know, all these little kids watching and all the little kids that were in the pageant, and it came to the part where they revealed the baby Jesus, and she said, I think it was like her little niece or nephew, that they unveil the baby Jesus, and the little child goes, ooh, scary monster.
And and that's where you got the idea, oh, I'm going to use that for my book.
And that just stuck in my head.
So we haven't seen the last of Vincent Ann, right?
Oh, no,
I like them too much. I really do. They don't have a perfect life, obviously, because she's been traumatized.
Yeah.
But he has yet to be traumatized. You're going to traumatize him in the future sometime?
I wouldn't be surprised if Vince gets a little traumatized somewhere along the way.
But it's funny because, it's not every day you read a thriller about a man who gets traumatized.
That's true.
I can't think of one offhand where a man is traumatized. I mean, the men are always seemingly the stronger ones in the books. It's amazing. And the women are always ones that cry and show emotion. But
yeah,
there are a lot of strong women out there, too.
Anne really stood up for herself, though. I was quite proud of Anne in Deeper Than the Dead. She gets her licks in there at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. Deep in the Dead is one of those books that I read it. I couldn't, it's just, you can't wait to talk about it with somebody else. It's a great book discussion book.
Yeah. I think, partly I think bringing in the element of the children as primary characters and getting their point of view on what happens in that book makes it a little extra, just gives it a little extra twist.
But unfortunately, it'll never be a school pick, though.
No.
Not a high school pick, anyway.
Not in a regular school.
An adult night school pick, maybe.
Perhaps.
But
yeah.
It's interesting. We had somebody come into the store the other day. He said that his assignment from his class, and this kid was no more than a 16, maybe, or 17, was he could read any New York Times bestseller and report on it. And they all picked this one book that's called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell.
Yeah.
Now, if you know anything about this book, it is the most foul,
oh no,
horrible book you'd ever want to read.
Oh no!
It's horrible. I mean, it's full of language and sex and everything bad that you to accept. But it's to excess. That's the problem. It's not just every 50 pages or so. It's all the time.
Constant.
And I can't imagine what this kid is going to report on.
Oh, my goodness.
And if he has,
the title was just too intriguing for a teenage boy.
And, it's just vile. That's the best term I can think of for a book like that. But,
oh, no.
But, what are we turning into these days?
Yeah, you wonder.
But, if the parents knew, they'd be outraged.
Oh, God, I would think so.
I wonder what your daily life is like. I mean, do you write 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, or are you writing all the time, or what?
No, it kind of depends on where I'm at with the book. Like right now, I'm just I'm starting to gather information on the next book, do a little bit of research.
So tell me what it means to gather information. What do you do?
Well, now I know certain things about the story. This story has got a working title. I think, what is it? Down the Darkest Road, and it's the story of a woman who lost a teenage daughter in an abduction. They don't know if she's alive or dead, and she's struggling with this, and the police felt they knew who did it, but they couldn't link him conclusively to the crime. They were never able to bring charges against this man, and she's quite obsessed with the whole idea of getting the truth from him and exacting revenge, really. But I know that it's going to hinge on DNA evidence will play a really key role, because when the girl was abducted, they couldn't get the same kind of information from the crime scene evidence that they could get when the book actually takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a transition period in there where the technology is advancing, but she's lost patience with it. And, so I'll go back now and do some more extensive reading on DNA evidence and what was available at that time, so I can pinpoint the year.
There's a lot to do research on, especially with your books are always so detailed. I mean, it's interesting, I have to ask you about this. Because you always drop in these serial killers, these real serial killers in real life.
Yeah.
Then you, like, I think you mentioned Ed Gein in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And a few others. I think, I'm not sure if you mentioned Jeffrey Dahmer or not. There's another one, but I...
Yeah, I think...
Are you kind of, I don't know how to put this delicately, a little obsessed with serial killers?
Well, it's a fascinating subject, you know, and I've studied many, many cases, you know, a lot of which people wouldn't recognize the names of the killers.
What is it? I've often wondered why it's fascinating. I mean, I read them and I get really disturbed, especially knowing it really happened. I mean, but why is it fascinating to you? I mean, is it?
You know, I think it's that question of, you know, how is it that someone can so detach themselves? And these are the killers that are the most fascinating to me, are the guys that so compartmentalize their lives that they can be living a seemingly normal, ordinary life, and they have this, you know, quote-unquote hobby where they go out and do these insanely horrible things, commit just unbelievable atrocities against people, and then they come back to this real life and they act like nothing happened. And, you know, to the point that even their wives and families don't have a clue that they're up to this. And I just find that fascinating.
The wives never find blood on the collars or anything?
No. recently saw an interview with the wife of the Green River Killer.
Right.
Gary Ridgway, who is the most prolific serial killer of our time. Hmm. And she was happily married to him for many years. And he adored her. She had no idea.
So none of that rage, he must have some kind of rage that's making him kill all these people. None of it's directed at her.
So how does he switch that off and on? And even after he went to prison, he stayed in contact with her and wrote her frequently and expressed his love for her and, you know, tried to apologize to her for being the most horrible serial killer of our time.
Well, he must have been away a lot, didn't she? Must have suspected something.
Well, what he did was he told her he was going to work early, that he was working early, an early shift or an overtime shift, going in early and working early. He had a job where he painted trucks, like big semi, you know, tractor trailer trucks. And he would say, well, I'm going to go in early and get some overtime. And she was just like, okay, you know, that's fine. And he'd go off and pick up a hooker and kill her. And that's what he was doing with his time. And she had just absolutely no idea, not an inkling. Same thing with the BTK killer in Wichita.
Right.
had a wife and two kids. And, you know, was committing these incredibly horrible crimes. Really, I mean, he had some really sick and twisted fantasies, that guy. And his wife had no idea, none. Hmm. And there was a lull in his career as a serial killer where he was sort of dormant for a long time. And when they caught him and asked him, what were you up to during these years? Because the police had believed that, you know, whoever the killer was, they must be incarcerated somewhere for something else. And this is why we're not seeing any activity. And he said, well, you know, I was really busy with my kids.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, how disturbing is that?
It's disturbing and interesting and everything all wrapped up into one. But
exactly.
And we just hope and pray we don't know anybody like that.
I know, but how would you even know?
But, I mean, we've all met people that would suddenly get angry.
Oh, yeah.
And you wonder, you know, what if that rage were, I don't know.
Yeah, what if they didn't control?
It's hard to,
missing that little key.
How long have you been writing about serial killers? I mean, have you always thought of them ever since you started writing? Or is it something that you, as you started writing thrillers, you would get some kind of interest in it?
Well, you know, it's something I've been interested in actually from a fairly early age, because I can remember when I was in junior high school reading reading about the Boston Strangler, and just being fascinated by that and how that person could do what he did. And
people are going to think I'm trying to say you're a twisted individual, but no, you seem very normal. I don't want them to think you're a total weirdo or anything.
Yeah, well, no. I have a happy side.
I mean, we've talked about Jeffrey Deaver, and he writes, his books are pretty twisted, too, and yet I think he's a very normal person.
Yeah, Yeah, well, a lot of people say that when they meet me. They're like, but you seem so nice. I'm like, I am nice. I'm a nice person.
I know, they
like to delve into these darker issues.
I can't imagine what people say to you at your signings. What did they come up with? Well, maybe I'll find out when you come to our store next year. I'm dying to know. I can't wait till you come to the store. But I mean, what does somebody do? Do they come up to you and do they ask you if you have a twisted mind? Do they come around and ask you?
Not usually, no. I mean, I think most of the people who come to the signings have a similar bent. You know, this or they wouldn't be reading these types of books. You know, they're interested in a lot of the same.
Well, what makes your book stand out is the characters, like I said before, are three-dimensional. They're very, you get to know these characters. It's not like, you know, I just have a character, he's a serial killer, and he's just a
right.
serial killer. There's motivations, there's reasons why these people are doing these things,
yeah.
and you have interesting side characters, too, in your books. I mean, all your characters are interesting.
That's what I enjoy the most, is creating the character and learning about the character and watching them take shape.
I wonder how you pick the character names. I'm curious. I mean, do you just sit there and say, well, what should I name this character? And
sometimes they just kind of come to me and I think, oh, I like that name. And you know, sometimes they require many sheets of scratch paper as I combine different names and see what looks good and what, you know, trips off the tongue and what isn't too difficult to type and things like that, you know. And then every once in a while, you know, for instance, in these last two books now, there's a character, Fran Goodsell. There are two characters, Fran Goodsell and Jane Thomas, and those are actual real people.
Hmm.
Fran,
oh, they are?
Yeah, Fran Goodsell is a good friend of mine. He lives in Germany. He's an American living in Germany.
Oh.
And
is he just like the character in the book?
He is exactly like the character in the book.
Oh, really?
He is a riot.
Well, bring him to the signing with you, will you?
Yes.
I'd like to meet him.
He happens to come over, you know. He's quite a character. And for his 40th birthday, I couldn't be there for his birthday party. And he was quite unhappy with me about that. And I thought, well, I have to give him something really great. What can I give him? And so I gave him a character. I said, oh, you're going to be a character in the next book. And he was over the moon.
Huh. That's great.
Yes. And now he's like one of the most popular characters.
Now, is Jane the same way in real life?
Jane, actually, Jane Thomas bought the right to be a character back in 2008. The U.S. Equestrian Team Foundation was raising money to send the team to the Olympic Games in China. And so they wanted some really unique auction items. And I said, well, what if I donated the chance to be a character? And Jane Thomas purchased that for like $20,000.
Wow, really?
Which was tremendous help to the team and very flattering to me. And now both of those characters live on. You know, they both became very important characters.
Now, she's not related to Ed Thomas, who used to own the that mystery bookstore in California, is she?
I don't think so.
Okay, because now I forget the name of the bookstore. I don't know. It's not. Is it Book Carnival? I'm not sure.
I know a store called that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the first thing it hit me when you said that name.
Oh.
How interesting that you have characters that are real people and act just like the characters.
Yeah.
Hopefully there aren't any Dennises out there.
No, I don't personally know a Dennis, thank goodness.
Were you thinking Dennis the Menace when you wrote it?
I didn't really think about it consciously. And then after I was writing the book and into it, and that's who he was, and then I started thinking, oh, my God, he is, you know, Dennis is a menace.
Menace in the
society,
you know? Yeah, really. I mean, although Dennis on TV never did that.
Ooh, no.
But, I mean, it just hit me, Dennis the Menace, and I thought, I wonder if that was going through your head. What in the world do you do in your spare time when you're not writing to get away from this stuff? I mean, you can't think about it all the time, can you?
No, because you know, I have this other career as an equestrian, so that's the first thing I do in the morning is I'm on a horse. And
how many horses do you have?
I have three competition horses for this coming season, and one semi-retired horse who still requires that she get her work,
right?
Every other day. You know, the competition horses work every day, and I'm extremely serious about that. Very serious about the riding, and you know, my goal is to make the U.S. team, and so that takes up part of, you know, half of my day, and then I come home, and you know, the riding takes up the other part of the day, and there really isn't very much time left for anything else.
And you don't even have time to read a book.
Hardly, yeah. I mean, I get to read when I'm on airplanes. I'm looking forward to going away for Christmas, because I'll be able to read on the way there and back.
Now, do you have authors that you're friends with?
Oh, yeah.
That you read all their books?
You know, I don't get time to read everybody's books.
No.
But we all have this kind of, you know, unwritten rule that, you know, you as a friend, you are only required to purchase the book.
Oh, I see.
And then if you get to read it, that's great. But if you don't, you know, you've...
And you just hope they don't ask you.
Well, nobody does. Nobody ever does.
Really?
Oh, never. Never.
Huh.
No, we never do.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I have a group of friends that we all met when we were writing romance. Two were historical romance novelists, and two of us wrote contemporary. And we've been friends now for 22 years. And, you know, and our careers have taken different paths and everything. And we all buy each other's books. And if we get a chance to read them, that's fabulous. And if we don't, that's okay, too.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're too busy to read them a lot of times, like you said. That's exactly
the way. Yeah, I have a backlog for sure.
Yeah. Everybody has a pile of books they haven't gotten to.
Yes.
Especially if you're really into reading. So, is that going to be the set title for the next book, the one you mentioned?
That's the working title. Down the Darkest Road. And so far, everybody's liking it. So, I don't know. We might tweak it a little bit here or there. But
What do you try to do with each book? I mean, do you try to make each book better? And is that hard? And what do you do to try to make it better?
Well, you know, I don't look at it that way. When I sit down to write a book, I want to write the very best book I can write right then.
So how does
I don't think about the book that I wrote before?
So how does it all come together? How do you think of all these different plot lines and who's going to be what and who's going to do what? And I assume you have to know who the killer is pretty much in the beginning.
No.
Oh, you don't?
No. I mean, sometimes I'll go into a book and I'll think I know who the killer is, or I'll have an agenda that the killer is going to turn out to be this person, and here's why. And I'll get like halfway into the book, and then I'm bored, you know, because I'm like, well, I already know who the killer is. This isn't fun now. You know, I want to be surprised. I want the reader to be surprised. I want to be surprised.
Well, I was definitely surprised. I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah.
At all. I can't even say what it is. I just have to say it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is torture for me, Tammy. You have no idea how hard this is. Not to want to blurt it out and say, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember which book it was, but I finished the book and I turned it in, and my editor called like a couple of days later and she said, you know, I'm not feeling this, you know, that this is who the killer is. I said, oh, don't worry about it. That's not who did it. And it already struck me like, oh my God, I was wrong.
Right.
That's not that person. It was this person. And, so I had to go back. But the weird thing is, when I went back in to make sure that all laid out right, it was all in there already. You know, all the red herrings were in there. All the clues were in there. They were already in there.
Right.
And I just sort of failed to see it at the end, because I had sort of had an idea for a particular person to be the killer. And I was mistaken.
You're very sure of yourself. That's nice to hear. I mean, you seem to know exactly what you have to do to make a book better, and what it's going to take, what kind of work it's going to take, and how long it's going to take. But I know there was a period in your writing where I thought you had stopped writing. And
yeah, I kind of slowed down for a while, and I had a lot of different things going on in my personal life, and there was a year there where I was quite ill and wasn't able to work.
I'm glad I heard you just got over bronchitis.
Yes.
I'm glad you're better.
I still hear it in my nasal quality.
Yeah, you sound great to me. I don't care. I'm just so appreciative of all the work you do to make a book that we can enjoy.
Well, that's, you know, I love doing it.
And, you know, we love reading it, that's for sure. I don't even have the finished book in front of me. They were supposed to send me a copy of the finished book so I could see the cover, but...
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. I don't even... I have an advanced reading copy, and it was supposed to arrive today, and I don't know where it is. I think the mailman was... The mailman's probably sitting next to... in a truck somewhere reading your book.
Maybe. I mean... pages turned down, you know. Something was up.
I have to warn my audience that when you start reading this book, it's going to be very difficult to go to sleep, so be careful you don't read it late at night.
Yeah, so no reading late at night, or else you just stay up.
You literally will not get any sleep. And that must make you feel good, knowing that people can be that interested in your books. And
that's high praise. You know, I skipped work. My family didn't get dinner. I didn't sleep for 2 days.
And what's great is, I mean, you're famous in the book world, but you walk down the street and probably nobody even says anything to you.
For the most part, no. Although every once in a while I'll have people recognize me, and it just freaks me out completely because I don't expect people to know writers on site, you know.
Right.
And every once in a while somebody will come up to me and say, "Oh, aren't you Tammy Hoag?" I'm like, "Who wants to know?"
Yeah, really. Whatever it depends on who's asking.
Yeah, who's asking.
That's great. I mean, you wonder about, I mean, the life of a celebrity, the life of, like, Angelina Jolie. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
Not even be able to walk down the street without being mobbed. And.
That's got to be just totally strange. You can't have a moment where your guard is down, you know. I mean, I was at the World Equestrian Games, and there was, like, thousands and thousands of people there. And I was walking around the trade fair, and this group of ladies came up to me and said, "Aren't you Tammy Hoag?" And I'm like, "Oh, my God, I'm glad they weren't looking when I was, you know, had ice cream on my nose or anything."
Right, exactly.
Like,
it's funny how self-conscious you get all of a sudden when somebody asks you that question.
Like, "Oh, my God, what do I look like today? Usually I'm going around with, you know, horse slobber all over my..."
Well, I can tell you, when I saw you at the BoucherCon, that, how many years ago was I? You looked wonderful. So
well,
that...
I do clean up. I do clean up well.
Right. You don't do a lot of touring anymore, or do you just do? Do you still live in Minnesota part time?
No, I'm now Florida full time as of this year.
Okay, now you're, because I know you were in Minnesota for a number of years.
Yeah, born and raised up there.
All that snow, I'm sure you don't miss that.
Not a bit. I never ever got used to being cold, and you know, lived there my whole life. But I was just like, I'm cold for 6 months out of the year. This is not good to me.
But I do have to ask you, I'm curious, where did your love of horses come from? I mean, was it your mother or father or somebody in your family?
No, that's weird. Well, it's a lot of weird things about me, but that's one of them. No, there was no horse background in my family at all.
So
and I just loved horses from a very, very young age.
Huh. You don't even know where it came from. Maybe you were watching TV one day, and there it was.
Who knows, you know? I mean...
It could be anything.
A lot of little girls are horse crazy, and who knows why. But I grew up reading...
You're too honest to be really crazy. If you were crazy, you'd start to act weird, or you'd get real paranoid. But you don't get that way. You're very easy to talk to.
Yeah, I just try to be who I am, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier that way. It's easier than trying to be somebody else.
Well, this has been so great. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I've been looking forward to this. And when they told me I could interview, I almost jumped up and down, you know. I really enjoy your books.
Well, thank you so much.
And the new one, again, is called Secrets to the Grave. It's out in all your bookstores on December 28th. Don't look for it before then because you won't find it. And it's just out from Dutton. Same publisher as Harlan Coben, I think.
Yes.
You're with Harlan. Harlan's a great guy.
Yeah.
It's been so great. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.